I know that no man can express a passion that he feeleth not, nor doth the pen deliver but what it copieth out of the mind.
Among that group of men and women known commonly as the English Martyrs, canonized by Pope Paul VI in 1970, was Robert Southwell, Elizabethan poet and Jesuit, martyred for his priesthood at Tyburn in the year of our Lord, 1595.
Robert Southwell was born in the year 1561 or 62 at Horsham St. Faith in Norfolk, of an old Catholic family. His father, who was a courtier to Elizabeth I, conformed to Protestantism out of ambition. But his mother remained a Catholic, and Robert was brought up in the old faith.
He was not yet 15 when he entered the English College at Douay, and 2 years later he asked to join the Society of Jesus in Belgium. But he was refused admission on account of his youth. Nothing daunted, Robert decided to show his determination by walking all the way to Rome. His persistence was rewarded, and he was admitted to the Jesuit novitiate in 1578.
8 years later, he was ordained a priest and went on the English mission the same year. For the next 6 years, we're told, the young Jesuit laboured with great zeal and success in and around London. From 1589, he was also chaplain to the Countess of Arundel, whose husband, Philip Howard, had been sentenced to death. Howard's sentence was not carried out, and he lingered on in prison, to die in the Tower the same year as Southwell at Tyburn, another of the 40 martyrs.
About this time, Robert was also writing profusely, and produced many of those works of prose and poetry which still hold their own today, and which have given the martyr poet a permanent place in the history of English literature. Not until the birth of Gerard Manley Hopkins, 300 years later, was the English Jesuit province to know such literary glory.
It was while Robert was confessor to Lady Arundel that he wrote a number of poems, published at various intervals, which were finally collected under the title St. Peter's Complaint. One of these, The Burning Babe, is perhaps Southwell's most celebrated poem.
As I, in hoary winter's night, stood a-shivering in the snow, surprised I was with sudden heat, which made my heart to glow. And lifting up a fearful eye to view what fire was near, a pretty babe, all burning bright, did in the air appear, who scorched with excessive heat, such floods of tears did shed, as though his floods should quench his flames, which with his tears were bred. Alas, quoth he, but newly born, in fiery heats I fry, yet none approach to warm their hearts or feel my fire but I. My faultless breast the furnace is, the fuel wounding thorns. Love is the fire, and sighs the smoke, the ashes, shames, and scorns. The fuel justice layeth on, and mercy blows the coals. The metal in this furnace wrought are man's defiled souls, for which, as now on fire I am, to work them to their good, so will I melt into a bath to wash them in my blood. With this he vanished out of sight, and swiftly shrunk away, and straight I called unto mind that it was Christmas Day.
Robert Southwell knew, as all priests who set foot on English soil at that time knew, that his ultimate destiny was not a poet's but a martyr's crown. Often, while going about his secret apostolate, he must have remembered Campion's battle cry.
The expense is reckoned, the enterprise is begun. It is of God, it cannot be withstood. So the faith was planted, so it must be restored.
Campion had died in 1581, when Southwell was a young man of 20, studying abroad for the priesthood. And 4 years after Campion's death, the English Parliament passed an act which increased the probability of martyrdom for every Catholic priest who came to England. This act made it high treason to be in England after having been made priest by Roman authority after the accession of the Queen.
Well, whereas diverse persons called or professed Jesuits, seminary priests, and other priests have of late years come and been sent into this realm of England of purpose to stir up and move sedition, rebellion, and open hostility to the utter ruin, desolation, and overthrow of the whole realm. For reformation whereof be it ordained, established, and enacted that all and every Jesuits, seminary priests, and other priests whatsoever made or ordained out of the realm of England by any authority, power, or jurisdiction derived, challenged, or pretended from the See of Rome shall within 40 days next depart out of this realm of England if the wind, weather, and passage shall serve for the same.
For Robert, then, it was only a question of time. Sooner or later, his luck would run out. Someone would leak the secret, the bloodhounds would pounce, and another witness to Christ would mount the scaffold.
Southall had many hairbreadth escapes, but his turn came in 1592. He was on his way to celebrate Mass near Harrow when he was captured and put under immediate arrest. He'd been betrayed by a Catholic girl who'd fallen into the hands of the notorious Richard Topcliffe. It was in the house of this monster of cruelty, as he's been called, that Robert Southall was first subjected to that most infamous of the tortures of penal times, the rack. He was to undergo it 9 more times in the next 3 years.
It's important to remember that torture was practiced in England, as in all other countries at the time, not as a punishment, but as a means of extracting information from a prisoner. Sometimes it was hoped he would admit his own guilt, but more often it was the complicity of others that the tormentors wished him to reveal.
The tortures of Catholic martyrs were not especially invented out of hatred for the Catholic religion or inflicted on Catholics only, any more than the penalties for high treason. What was particularly hard for the martyrs was that the torture was inflicted to make them tell what for them would have been a sin and a shame to tell. A priest was asked where he'd been housed, where he'd said Mass, who had been present at his Mass, whose confessions he'd heard, where other priests were to be found. To answer such questions meant involving innocent people, and this a priest clearly could not do.
His prayer was always that if and when he were taken, it might be outside and not in a house, where he could not save the family which had given him hospitality. Southall's fortune, if it can be called such, was that he was taken on the road. But from that moment on, his way was that of the cross.
Of the two kinds of racking, the one inflicted on Campion was to have cords fastened to the hands and feet and passed over windlasses by which they could be stretched as tight as the presiding magistrate chose. The other kind, reserved for Southall, was, Topcliffe boasted, guaranteed to enforce the victim to tell all. This he promised his queen.
But he did not know his man. For 4 days Robert Southall hung from the wall by his hands, a sharp circle of iron round his wrists, pressing on the artery, his legs bent backwards and his heels tied to his thighs. Topcliffe never allowed him to rest except when he seemed to be dying. Despite the severity and constancy of this torture, Southall's tormentors failed utterly in their attempt to extract any confession from him. His firmness and patience undid them, while the expression on his face was so sweet that even the servant who was watching him was moved. Throughout the ordeal, the only words Robert uttered were these: "My God and my all. God gave himself to thee, give thyself to God."
Topcliffe capitulated. He had failed his sovereign, and Southall was taken from his hands and removed to the Tower. There he was cast into a filthy hole, so vile that his Protestant father petitioned Elizabeth that, if his son had committed anything for which by the laws he had deserved death, he might suffer death. If not, as he was a gentleman, he hoped Her Majesty would be pleased to order that he should be treated as a gentleman and not be confined any longer in that filthy hole. And in fact, One of the most cruel parts of the torture was that when the victim was unable to put food in his mouth or in any way to help himself, he was then deprived of the barest necessities of life.
After 2.5 years in prison, Southwell was tried in Westminster Hall and condemned to death for his priesthood. Next day, the 21st of February 1595, he was dragged to Tyburn to be hanged, drawn, and quartered. On the scaffold, he prayed for the Queen, professed his faith and his priesthood, and begged his friends to pray for his perseverance in the final struggle. His last words were these:
"This my death, my last farewell to this unfortunate life, and yet to me most happy and most fortunate. I pray it may be for the full satisfaction of my sins, for the good of my country, and for the comfort of many others. Which death, although it seems here disgraceful, yet I hope that in time to come it will be to my eternal glory."
But the speedy dispatching of the martyr depended also on the efficiency of the individual executioner. And in Southwell's case, it's recorded, the unskillful hangman had not applied the noose of the rope to the proper place, so that he several times made the sign of the cross whilst he was hanging, and was some time before he was strangled, which some perceiving drew him by the legs to put an end to his pain.
In a quiet corner of Berkshire, there's a chapel dedicated to the English martyrs. It lies in the grounds of Stoner House, where Edmund Campion wrote his famous brag to Elizabeth's Privy Council. In Stoner Chapel, these words have been transcribed in honour of the martyrs who preserved the Mass there. They are the words of the poet Robert Southwell, who died at the age of 33, like his divine master.
"I know that no man can express a passion that he feeleth not, nor doth the pen deliver but what it copieth out of the mind.